Commissioner Moon's not here. So
I could introduce this.
Deputy Commissioner of Bureau of Development Services, Matt Grum.
Thank you, Mayor. Commissioners Matt Grum with Commissioner Saltzman's office. Just over a year ago, Council authorized the Bureau of Development Services to initiate a request for proposals process for a new permitting, plan review, and inspection management software system. On behalf of Commissioner Saltzman, I'm happy to announce that BDS and Purchasing have completed that process and are now ready to proceed to contract negotiation.
Wow.
BDS Director Paul Scarlett and Chief Procurement Officer Christy Moody will quickly lay out the project's current status and, of course, are here to answer your questions. But I quickly would just like to start out by thanking all the staff and private stakeholders who have worked so diligently over the past year to bring us to this point. This process has resulted in the selection of a highly qualified implementation vendor, Sierra Systems, and solid proven software from Hanson Information Technologies and Evolved Software Corporation. I'd like to specifically thank the volunteers who put in countless hours on this work. Keith Skilly, who is an amazing volunteer for BDS, as he's just ending his chairmanship of DRAC. He sits on our Budget Advisory Committee, and he was a member of this evaluation committee. As were volunteers Maurice Raming and Robert Mathias. I'd also like to thank our Technology Oversight Committee members, Ben Berry, Ken Neubauer, Doretta Schrock, Wilfred Pinfold, and Dave Lister. The TOC has been closely tracking the ITAP project since its inception and have been great in pushing BDS on its business case work and the rationale behind this incredibly important project. They will continue to closely watch it, and as we move forward, and we really appreciate the thankless work they perform. Acceptance of this purchasing report is a watershed moment for the project, and we're confident that the top-notch negotiating team will get us the best possible deal, and a solid, reasonable contract will be ready for enactment in the next few months. Paul and Christine will quickly walk us through, and of course, we're here to answer any questions.
Christine Moody, Procurement Services. So you have before you the procurement report recommending the award of 3 contracts for the permit case management information system. Sierra Systems, with a not to exceed $6,755,524 for system implementation. Hanson Information Technologies, with a not to exceed $1,579,764.20 for ongoing maintenance and support services. And Evolve Software Corp, with a not to exceed of $220,261.80 for licensing. Through the best and final offer process, we are comfortable with the pricing that has been put forward and will finalize contract negotiations with Sierra Systems, Hanson, and Evolve. I will turn this over to Paul Scarlett to talk about some technical aspects of the project.
Thank you, Christine, and thanks, Matt. Good afternoon, Mayor Adams and Commissioners. If I could take a second and deviate from my script. Mayor Adams and Commissioner Leonard, this is the last time I'll be in front of you as formal presenting to the council, and I want to thank you for your years of service and personally for your leadership and support that you've personally provided me over the years. I really appreciate it. Done a remarkable job for the city. Thank you.
Thank you.
The ITAP project, Information Technology Advancement Project, that Christine and Matt has introduced is one that we're very proud of advancing, and I want to express my appreciation for all the hard work that's taken place. I want to express clearly that I'm in full support of the advancement project moving forward, and I'm pleased with the outcome of the RFP process that's resulted in Sierra Systems being the top vendor. Certainly, this work couldn't have occurred without all the hard work that's been contributed by the number of volunteers from the Bureau of Development Services, interagency bureaus, and certainly the Technology Oversight Committee has played a major role in providing us input and support and oversight over the last several months. In particular, I want to thank Ross Caron, who's the current project manager, who took over from Hank McDonald, as Commissioner Leonard knows all of this from the inception. But Ross has done a remarkable job advancing this project and getting it through the RFP process. A couple of key other staff, Richard Appleyard, who's also a BDS employee, and Kim Talent, and they're in key roles and play a pretty major, certainly effort in moving this project forward. Keith Skilly, who's on a various number of our boards and committees, has also been instrumental in providing good assistance. The technology, as you know, it's in keeping with construction activities, a permitted plan review process. We are outdated, and we have a legacy system that needs to be improved, and we have, of course, entered into that process. I'm confident that the new system will provide the efficiency and the changes necessary to assist the development community and the customers and our employees to be more efficient and also result in a more cost-effective system. It will be a 24-hour system, 24/7 system that allows you to access the system from anywhere in the world, anywhere in your office, city of Portland, throughout the nation. That's something we're very excited about entering into. And in fact, we feel like we're a little bit behind, but certainly catching up. Overall, this project there's still a lot of work to be done. Allowing us to enter into contract negotiation is one of the critical steps, but the ultimate outcome will be to have a system in place that will benefit all users and not just developers and folks involved in actual development opportunities, but public or citizens who are curious about what is that zoning, what is the status of a building permit and whatnot. So we're pretty excited about the project overall, and I'm here to answer any questions, but I'm in full support and excited about how it's going so far. Thank you.
Questions? All right. Does anyone wish to testify on this matter?
I didn't have a sign-up sheet.
All right. This is a procurement report, so I'll entertain a motion to accept the report.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to accept the report contained in 1451. Carla, can you please call the vote?
Leonard?
Well, congratulations, Paul. I know this has been more than a year. Matt's been working on it certainly a year, but I don't know if it's been 4 years or 5 years.
'09. We started looking into it.
So this is really a watershed moment that will take the Bureau of Development Service and its permitting processes to a new step for us, but a step that other communities have enjoyed for years. And I know it'll make your staff it'll be easier for your staff to process permits. It'll be easier for us to track what's going on. And I'm really excited to be able to vote for this before I leave. It was a very important project, I know, for you and for me. And thank you, Matt, for helping shepherd this through. Aye.
Fritz.
Commissioner Leonard, this is indeed a legacy project for you, another one that I appreciate coming to Council. Director Scarlett, this is one of the best public involvement statements that I have read, and I really appreciate your staff's diligence in saying not only who was involved, but how was the outcome shaped by that. And all three of you for your work on this project. Thank you. Aye.
Thank you.
Fish?
Congratulations to all. Aye.
Adams?
About time. thanks to Commissioner Leonard for the early work on this, to Commissioner Saltzman for his work on the latter end, to Director Scarlett, Director Moody, and what's your official title?
Policy manager, sir.
Policy manager Matt Grum. This is really important to our ability to be accountable, to problem solve, to save money. I'm really excited. Thanks. Aye. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance item number 1435? Do they work together or are they separate? They're separate, right. Commissioner Fish.
What was the numbers?
Which one did you call?
53. What did I do wrong?
You said 35. You meant 53?
53. Thanks.
That's a non-emergency item. 1453, adopt findings, authorize an exemption to the competitive bidding process to procurement services pursuant to ORS 279C and PCC 5.34, authorize contracts and provide payment for construction of the Washington Park Reservoirs Improvements Project.
Commissioner Randy Leonard.
And were we going to read 56, 57, and 58 at the same time? 1456, 1457, 1458. We might as well do all three at once.
Yep.
Right.
All four, actually. I'm sorry.
1456.
That's right.
Authorized contract with AECOM for design and construction support services for the Washington Park Reservoirs Improvement Projects. 1457, authorized contract with Cornforth Consultants, Inc. for geotechnical design services for the Washington Park Reservoirs Improvements Project. And 1458, accept modification in compliance approach by adding a change order for the Powell Butte Reservoir Number 2, Phase 2 Project.
Water Bureau Director David Schaff.
Good afternoon, Mayor, City Council. I'm David Schaff. I'm the Director of the Portland Water Bureau. With me is Christine Moody, the City's Procurement Officer. With me also are Mike Stewart, Chief Engineer of the Water Bureau, and Teresa Elliott, the Principal Engineer and Project Manager for our LT2 Open Reservoirs Project. I'm going to do a very short introduction, and then I'll shift over to Christine, and then we'll go back to me, and then presumably we'll answer questions if there are any. So why are we here now? That was a question that Commissioner Fritz asked yesterday. And the reason is we expected to be here sometime a while ago, but because of the work that we've been doing on trying to get the Oregon Health Authority to give us an extension, we, as you'll recall, stopped work on the open reservoirs for a period of time. We are anticipating that this will require, the Washington Park work will require a Type 4 land use review because of the historic structures. And that will require us, we believe, to be about 18 to 24 months worth of review. In order to submit our permits and our permit applications, the visible features of the Washington Park facility will need to be designed to about the 75 to 90% level. We need at least a year to design to that level, as well as to do the public outreach before we can submit. Given the guidance that we'd received from the mayor-elect, where he had asked for a little bit of breathing room that first month in office, we're worried that we'll lose over a quarter of time, 3 months' worth of time, to get work underway. If we do that, we're not going to be able to meet the compliance deadlines. We have three compliance deadlines for this particular project. March 31, 2016, we have to submit the designs to OHA for approval. We have to begin construction July 1 of 2016. We have to be done and have the reservoir in operation by December 31, 2019. So if we don't submit the land use review by January of 2014, we don't believe we'd be able to meet our LT2 compliance schedule. I'm going to shift over to Christine now to let her talk about the CMGC process, and then we'll come back to the ACOM and Cornforth contracts.
So item 1453 is asking for an exemption to the traditional low bid process using an RFP process to select a construction manager general contractor for the Washington Park Reservoirs Improvement Project. This project involves technical complexities and requires specialized expertise for its construction with work around historic features and steep slopes. Procurement Services and the Portland Water Bureau will conduct a competitive RFP process to select the CMGC contractor. Using this process will result in substantial cost savings to the public because the CMGC will participate in value engineering and constructability reviews and will develop a construction phasing plan and well-coordinated project schedule.
So on the ACOM, the design portion of the project, the procurement is providing for the design and construction support services to replace the open reservoir number 3 with a 15 million gallon buried storage reservoir on site, and then to disconnect the second reservoir, number 4, from the public water system in order to comply with the LT2 requirements on open reservoirs. We did RFP solicitations following the process designed by the city. We did get four proposers: MWH, Black & Veatch, CH2M Hill, and ACOM. There were a total of 91 firms that reviewed the RFP. We received two proposals on the Cornforth geotechnical contract, Shannon and Wilson and Cornforth. We had selection committees for both of those. They involved a member of the Minority Evaluator Program and then four Water Bureau employees from the Engineering Services Group. the MWESB effort for the $15.2 million design contract with AECOM will be using approximately 20 sub-consultants, 10 of whom are state-certified MWESB firms. They'll receive approximately 24% of the total contract. And on the geotech contract with Cornforth, they'll be using 6 sub-consultants, 4 of whom are state-certified MWESB firms, approximately 13% of the total contract. Total budget for the Washington Park project is approximately $70 million. The design and construction support contract is about 21% of that total project cost. Commissioner Saltzman typically asks this. This is slightly higher than the standard than standard reservoir projects, which has been historically about 15% to 20%, and it's due to the complexity of the project being located at the toe of a large active landslide, the need for deep foundations, and the locations within an urban park in proximity to a residential neighborhood. Opportunities for public comment. It will impact, this project will impact the aesthetics of the Washington Park Reservoir site, as well as users of Washington Park and, of course, the local community. The Water Bureau will be developing a public outreach plan for the project, and it will include involvement from public stakeholders and address impacts to the community. We will be using, during the design process, the same firm that we've been using on the Powell Butte project, JLA Public Involvement, and then of course our own staff will be working on public outreach activities in the summer of 2013, meetings with neighborhood associations, residents adjacent to the park, several public meetings, and then the stop and talk public events that we typically do. That's it for Washington Park. Let me segue over to the Mount Tabor piece. As you'll recall, on the east side of the river, the Mount Tabor project portion of the LT2 consists of several things. One is building Powell Butte 2, the second is building Kelly Butte, and the third is what we call the Mount Tabor adjustments, and that's got two phases. One is work that's done in the right-of-way, and one that is done at work that is done in the park itself. The work in the right-of-way is what we're bringing forward today. What we're bringing forward today requires some explanation. We're doing a change order. Now, normally, under the city's rules, because it doesn't hit the 25% amount of the original contract, I could simply sign a change order and direct Mike and Teresa to go ahead and make those changes and have the work done. But this is an LT2 related project. It tends to generate a lot of controversy, or at least public comment, and rather than do that, I decided to bring it in front of you so that you know what we're doing. We have three valves and associated, or three sites, excuse me, all in Division Street, 42nd, 67th, and 68th, that will involve valve work, pipe work, and that sort of thing to get us to the next stage, the final stage of the Mount Tabor Reservoir project, which would be the disconnection work and the actual work in the park. Now, we could put this out to bid, and the reason why we chose to do the change order route is because we have SSC, the folks that are doing Powell Butte, on site. They're already mobilized. It will be cheaper for us to do it, and they will be able to use a current MWESB contractor. The alternative is for you to say, no, we want you to put it out to bid. We would put it out to bid, and that would be your typical low bid project, and we'd go through that process. So this is cheaper, this is more efficient, and it meets the council's interest in using MWESB certified contractors. With that, I'm open for questions.
The mayor left me with the gavel, which is always a dangerous thing. I don't think it's actually my turn. Just following up on that last point, how do you know you're getting a cheaper product if you don't, well, for both that and for the CMGC, how do we know that we get a good price for the ratepayers?
Well, we negotiate that the price with SSC, the current contractor, and we don't have to go through all of the. I mean, there is a lot of work that's involved in putting a contract out to bid. So, our belief is that we will save both time and money doing this. But there isn't a guarantee, Commissioner.
Okay. And then on the bigger contract for Washington Park, is there a community benefits agreement involved in that?
And Teresa passed me a note saying that SSC did competitively bid that portion to subcontract. So they've competitively bid it, the SSC, the prime contractor.
I don't understand what that means.
Well, hey. Teresa, go ahead. Or you.
Do you want me to do it? No, you go ahead.
Teresa's under the weather
she's
right
sick.
Now.
So she's
subcontractors to find out whether or not to get the price and find out whether it was a price that we could live with or not. The contractor that they selected, if we chose to go this route, was the lowest bid contractor and is 100% MWSB contractor.
Thank you. And I should mention that David, Mike, and Teresa gave my staff and me a fascinating tour of the reservoir construction at both Powell Butte and Kelly Butte. I hope that standing outside in the rain is not what has precipitated your illness. So thank you very much for that and for the clear explanation. Also, as I often do, pointing out to the young women at home that here we have a woman who's in charge of this massive construction project and doing a great job on it. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
I do have some other questions. Do we know what's the impact on the rates by approving these contracts now rather than in a couple of years?
It won't have any different impact. Our what we call our SIPR, Capital Improvement Plan Annual Report, the methodology we use there, the rate impact of the project overall is 4.8% over the life of the project.
And so tell me again about the community benefits agreement as part of the construction project?
That's not part of this project. Remember, what we've done, what the council did 2 months ago.
I think she might be asking about Washington Park.
Yeah, I am, about Washington Park. That we have, a couple of months ago, we approved doing Kelly Butte and the interstate facility
as pilot programs.
Does acting on this now preclude, because we had some challenges with the interstate facility having already gone out to contract and then having to retrofit it for a community benefits agreement. Might there be some benefit in delaying this for a couple of months so that we could make sure that we can put that community benefits agreement into this one?
This isn't the construction contract, Commissioner.
You're talking about the CMGC. When we brought the Powell Butte and the interstate projects to City Council as pilot projects, we were also with the understanding that we were going to review how those projects worked as a pilot project before we were adding a community benefits agreement onto additional projects. So at this point, that hasn't been decided to put this onto this project, because those other two projects are just beginning and we don't have an analysis of that.
One of the things I'd like to explore between this time and next week is that on the Oregon Sustainability Center, there was some discussion about having community or equity in the design portion of that facility as well as in the construction. So that's a question that I would like some more discussion on. How confident are you in the $70 million price tag for the Washington Park?
I'll let Teresa or Mike add. I mean, under the city standards, we refer to that as a low confidence rating because we have to design it, and then once the design is done, then we'll put it out to not really to bid. We'll be negotiating under the terms of the CMGC agreement. We do have a basis of design report that gave us an estimate of approximately $38 million to build what we believe we'll end up designing. But under the city's rules, the confidence rating is at this point low. Mike, do you want to add, or Teresa?
I would say that's correct, but I would also add that you don't get a very accurate construction estimate. This one would be considered to be plus or minus 50%. I know that sounds like a lot, but in this case, I don't think it's terribly accurate. We have a really good BDR.
Basis of design report.
We have a really good BDR, and we've been working with Cornforth, who is my, in my view, a premier consultant in the geotechnical work, and that's what makes this difficult. And so our construction estimate on this, I think, is better than your average. But we won't really have a really good number for the project until we have completed the design, and there's a lot of work to go. So I don't know what more one can say. Do you want to add anything?
The only other thing I would have said is that the one of the reasons why, one of the unknowns in the estimate is the historic preservation of stuff and the permits that will be involved. That those are the big unknowns and why that number is really at a low confidence at this point.
Much of this will have to come clear as we work our way through the design and the land use process and the public involvement process.
What safeguards are in these proposals to identify which historic structures stay and what the outcome will look like?
Partly that comes out of the land use process, but I think our did you bring your slide?
I did.
Carla, can you pop our slide up?
So that is, that's a two slides. The one on the left is what our current facility looks like. I have heard it described and have described it as a bathtub with a dirty ring around it. The one on the right is not a description of what it will look like. It's what it used to look like. That's what it was before we put in before we started the temporary cover process. The goal is to have it look like that when we're done.
Fundamentally, so, we're going to put a tank underneath what is going to be a reflecting pool, and that preserves the historic character of the facility, and that's the objective of the National Historic
Preservation
Act.
Is it going to be a waiting pool open to the public?
It will look like it does now with a fence around it, and there will be a relatively shallow body of water on top, a reflecting pond, yes.
On a waiting pool.
And you're distracting. All right. What's the impact on rates of the reservoir project?
You asked that question, and I said the our CIPR, the Capital Improvement Plan Annual Report, estimates that the overall rate impact is about 4.8% over the life of that contract, or the project.
So whether we do it quicker or slower, that would get spread out.
It's not going to make any difference. The approximately $70 million that we have put into our five-year capital plan anticipates that amount of money, and that amount of money hasn't changed.
Additional council discussion? Additional presentation? Then let's go to testimony. Carla?
We have six people signed up. The first four, please come on up, are Mary Saunders, Floyd Jones, Dee Witt, and Michael Morgan.
Where are you?
I just want us to go in now.
Oh, okay. You want me to go first?
No.
But after.
Hi, who would like to begin?
We'll go in the order called.
Okay. Hi. Welcome.
Hi. Greetings. I'm Mary. I'm often here this time of year. Mary Saunders is my full name. And I have worked as part of the Citizens for Portland's Water.org group and other groups advocating for clean, affordable water in Portland. And I'm here today to speak to the issue of no-bid contracts and of sufficient time for the public to be involved in complicated issues. The announcement in the business paper has pretty truncated paragraphs about what is actually in all of the backup test, the backup verbiage. So one of my concerns is that the public can be informed enough to weigh in and have enough time to weigh in. In addition, there's been concern at the council about equity. That's another issue I want to bring up in relation to no-bid contracts. The other one is accessibility. So I would like the public to really be able to have access to all the information that might relate to us before the time comes for us to speak. Transparency. There are issues with transparency in the city charter, so that's another reason to get all of the information out in a very timely way. I also feel that the cautionary principle is served by having a bidding process, because competitive bidders may notice things that we need to be aware of. We're all aware of side effects and medication and things like that. We all want to know best case, worst case, best practice, all those kinds of issues before we make decisions that will be very costly. I was at a service place this morning and I said, well, I'm going down to testify about water and the cost of water as one of the issues, and the person behind the corner, the counter, said, uh-oh, is my rent going to go up again? So these are big concerns for citizens here and for employment and for local access to bidding competitively. So those are my comments. Thank you for hearing my concerns.
Thank you very much, sir.
Regarding items 1453, 1456, 1457, and 1458, what we don't want to do is to bring these planning, design, and construction activities any earlier than is necessary. To note, Washington Park Reservoir 3 design work is not required to begin until 2014, and construction work not until 2017, and Mount Tabor construction work is not required to begin until 2014, according to the LT2 compliance schedule approved by the Environmental Protection Agency in March 2009. In this approved LT2 compliance schedule, planning, design, and construction are already required to be done earlier than is beneficial for Portland. It would be much better today if they could originally have been scheduled farther out in time, and instead of now bringing these activities to be even earlier than the schedule requires, it would benefit us to do the opposite and delay these activities as much as possible, and most importantly, to seek a deferral of the approved LT2 compliance schedule. That Rochester, New York obtained a 10-year deferral of their LT2 compliance schedule because of financial hardship, limited resources, and the Environmental Protection Agency LT2 rule review is even more reason for us to delay LT2 compliance activities and make a strong effort to obtain a similar deferral for similar reasons, which, by logic, we should be able to obtain as well. Rochester demonstrated that water utilities are not required to demonstrate continuing steady progress toward compliance as stated in the Oregon Health Authority May 2012 letter denying Portland's request for a delay in the approved compliance schedule. I'm concerned that we are moving towards spending $400 million on underground water tanks that we simply do not need nor want. The cost is huge, and the benefits of covering finished water resources are uncertain. The high cost and uncertain benefits of the LT2 cover requirement gave rise to the ongoing Environmental Protection Agency LT2 rule review and was expressed by Elisa Jackson. One of her statements was that we should and can find cost-effective ways of achieving public health protection from waterborne parasites and diseases such as Cryptosporidium. She made other statements, and all those statements she made indicate she is willing to make changes to the LT2 rule treat or cover requirement if the science supports them. Our congressional delegation in an October 2011 letter...
So, sir, your time's up. You want to wrap up?
Said that we are wrestling with the immense cost and uncertain benefits of covering its water reservoirs. The mayor of Rochester and the director of their Department of Environmental Services made statements regarding the uncertainty of the benefits of the LT2 rule treat or cover.
So thank you for your testimony. Appreciate it. Ms. Jones?
Yes, Floyd Jones, Friends of the Reservoirs. As you know, Portland ratepayers have suffered a 61% increase in water rates just since 2008. You should be embarrassed. This isn't a failure of engineering. It's a failure of leadership. In light of the information that we uncovered regarding Rochester securing a deferral of open reservoir projects, their two historic reservoirs set in city parks until 2024, it's outrageous that you would consider adding these fast-track projects to burden ratepayers. You're bringing them forward 2 years ahead of the Portland Water Bureau's own schedule. New York City and Rochester sought and secured lengthy reprieves for their open reservoirs. You roll over. Mayor Bloomberg, Mayor Richards of Rochester see ratepayers as constituents to be protected. You see us as cows to be milked. Every time this issue comes up, you protest, we're doing everything we can. You haven't, and you aren't. And approving these contracts on a fast-track schedule demonstrates that. Other cities are doing everything they can to avoid these costly, unnecessary projects. They are succeeding, and you are sitting on your hands. Commissioner Amanda Fritz ran on a campaign of keeping reducing water rates and preserving the functionality of our historic open reservoirs. She crushed her opponents. Skyrocketing water rates are outstripping growth and personal incomes. High water rates have made Portland a less competitive place to do business. And now, you know, you're looking to add to that. So to those of you who will remain on the city council in the new year, this is your opportunity to chart a new course. It's time to defend our water system, stand up for ratepayers, protect your constituents, and do the job you were elected to do. If you don't, we'll elect somebody else. We've sent you all of these documents from Rochester. They're very detailed, very specific, and it was a really simple process for them to secure a deferral based on economic hardship and constraints. The situation in Portland is by far worse than it is in Rochester. The increases in rates, the massive amount of debt that's been accumulated in the last few years, it's extremely an extremely more serious situation. You've heard the last time we testified, it took a full 3 minutes to read all of the organizations that do not support these projects. You have every opportunity now. There's a new city council coming on board. Publicly, Steve Novick has offered his support in achieving relief. The new mayor has offered his support. Commissioner Fritz has given that support. That's the direction that we need to go in the future. Thank you.
Thanks. Hi. Welcome.
Hi. I'm Dee White. And Michael and Floyd have said pretty much everything I was going to say anyway, but I'm going to read from the letter that a vast amount of organizations and associations sent to the Oregon Health Authority on November 19th and also to Governor Kitzhaber. Among those organizations, the one that Floyd has talked about that are so opposed to all these expensive projects are Portland Business Alliance, Southeast Uplift Neighborhood Coalition, Coalition for a Livable Future, Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility. These are just a few. Portland Water Users Coalition, et cetera. I'm just going to read a little bit from this letter. Recently, we uncovered information that the City of Rochester requested and secured a 10-year reprieve from the EPA LT2 reservoir treat or cover requirement for their two historic open reservoirs that are set in city parks just like us. The reasons outlined in their request are financial hardship, limited resources, and LT2 rule revision. Rochester worked with state and local public health officials and the EPA to quickly secure approval for this 10-year reprieve. Quickly. Rochester's case makes clear that utilities are not required to demonstrate continuing progress towards compliance, and that having any timeline in place is in itself compliance, and that economic hardship and rule revision are valid reasons for deferral. These reasons apply equally and as importantly to Portland. Financial hardship. Rochester argued that their water demand has declined and water rates have risen. Water demand in Portland has declined for 26 years, and our rates have gone up 61% just since 2008. Rochester's rates went 44% rise since 2000. Ours, 61 since 2008. Economic resources are limited. In their letters, Rochester rightly argued that limited financial resources are better spent on making improvements to the transmission and distribution system that would reduce the number of main breaks and associated interruption of service. The same can be said for Portland. Is it judicious to pay for an upgrade to our reservoirs, which we did recently close out that contract for $23 million, where we improved to upgrade the reservoirs, only to then pay to replace them. Rule revision. Rochester argued that the rule revision was prompted in order to reevaluate the effectiveness and the regulation in light of new data that brings into question the assumptions upon which the LT2 rule was promulgated. In light of this new information, it confirms that the EPA is not requiring continued steady progress, project progress. I would like to ask that you vote for no on these contracts, which are being brought 2 years ahead of schedule, Portland Water Bureau's own OHA-approved schedule. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. And next.
And next we have Brad Yaslino, Nancy Newell, and Beth. If you'll come up.
Anyone else after that?
And that's all.
Okay. Welcome back. You want to begin,
okay,
sir?
Okay, and we have one more, Sherry Lambert. Go ahead. Right.
Would you begin, sir?
Yes. Mr. Mayor, commissioners, this has, I want to agree with the last two testifiers especially. They really laid out all the logical reasons why this is really an unfortunate and really preemption of Portland citizens' ability to control their own futures, which is really quite different than what it all seemed like during the start of your tenures. I was there to see a few of you indicate that your interest was foremost with to respect public involvement, and I think that over the last few years we've seen that there's been a number of rather sophisticated and underhanded timing events that help to make this difficult for the public to see and understand. This is one of those. This is here. We are 2 weeks before the end of a couple of your tenures, and it's just a midnight vote to ensure that the Water Bureau is more or less in control of the water that's inside the bodies of most Portlanders. This is, it goes that deep. And the pity of it is that history will see that Portland had a marvelous water system, and that it is unproven that a covered water system is better. It's certainly more expensive, and we're all going to pay for it if it happens. It is really would be better if you just stopped your continuing press on the pedal of making this happen. If you notice, during the Water Commissioner, David Schaaf's testimony, he said that one of the reasons they're pushing this forward 2 years for public involvement. It's PR. The Water Bureau needs time to convince the public that, once again, this won't hurt them. It won't. It's just expensive. Forget about it. I probably don't have anything else to say, but I urge you to vote against these contracts because it's not your place to vote on these right now. Thank you.
Hi, welcome.
Hi. Terry Lambert Holstein. David Schaaf said, first of all, I want to say that I certainly agree with Floyd and Dee and Brad and Ed all. And thank you for saying that. David Schaaf said a while ago that what we are doing today requires some explanations. Nobody laughed. I'm kind of surprised why. I'd revise that to what the Water Bureau has not been doing requires even more explanations. They and the City Council have expedited so many water projects with a full speed ahead trajectory, emergency ordinances, no bid contracts, lack of equity and transparency, and et cetera, and et cetera. Other cities have received delays and deferrals of longevity, but this council and this Water Bureau do not have the respect for our amazing Bull Run system or for the people who use and pay for this water. You probably all recall the movie Chinatown about the water and the plots that centered around criminal and illegal activities. Portland has a slogan, the city that works. I'd suggest an addendum to that, the city that works like Chinatown.
Thank you. Hi, welcome back.
Hi, my name is Beth John Syracuse. And I would like to address those that are still going to be here. I've looked at everything for many years here at the economic plans and moving fast track, making it simple and easy to just keep the money flowing without stopping and bidding out and doing the whole money thing again to do that. I understand the economics of these plans. I also understand that Canada, Washington, Oregon, California are all up for a regional plan of creating a water consortium of sorts. And that perhaps all these buildings, all the things that we're doing here is to support that. And in that support, there is no other alternative other than to run fast track, to run emergency measures where we have a city charter that says, you know, we the people want to trust you, and you have a city charter saying that we want you to trust us. But when you can say it's an emergency because the sky is gray, and that's the only reason that there is an emergency on something, so the citizens don't get to say a word, or that exactly like what Cherry said about, or Brad said about the spinning that the Water Bureau does, about this is how we're going to do it and this is how it's going to be. And, you know, I mean, I've worked with it for many years now watching it, as you all well know, when I start writing my own spin on my own blogish stuff. But still, I'm coming back to Canada, Washington, Oregon, California, CH2M Hill going down with Oregon's representative, Weiss, I believe it was, down into California, San Diego, having a particular meeting. I'm not even sure if David was there. It's something that I would assume the Water Bureau here in Portland would definitely have something to say because we are basically the jewel of their Nile. And I think that we can pull out of this and have a different way of looking at our jewel other than the plan that they all have us set forward to march on. I think that the EPA is giving us the opportunity to do that in the review of the LT2, and I would really like for perhaps the Water Bureau LT2 woman to help with shifting that energy over, because we do have that opportunity now. I'm not sure what's happening all in the Water Bureau, nor is anybody else. When I'm looking at these two starred projects that I want to actually speak upon later on, I guess when I watched this morning at 9:30, and you all said it would be after 2 when you pulled a couple of the things off because it was emergency, but it was pulled out because it was an emergency because David Schaff said it's covered somewhere else or it got voted on somewhere else.
So thanks for your testimony. I appreciate it. Hi, welcome.
Thank you. I'm Nancy Newell. I think the people have spoken on the Water Bureau and the lack of trust of the Water Bureau. I think they've spoken on the impact it's had on every aspect of their lives, especially at the point when at the federal level we're at the fiscal cliff. And here we are in Portland destroying our water system. Not only are we overpaying for projects that we don't need, not only are we feeding the gluttonous pockets of known crooks that are contractors in this city, we are jeopardizing the very asset that the public put their money into for 100 years in this city. Why would we put at risk our own assets that have proven beautiful water in an open reservoir works every time? That's crazy. Are we really a crazy Portland? I don't think we're crazy. I think there are a lot of good people in here that have spoken to this council, and I think this is absolutely the right thing to do. I don't think that the direction you're taking, Commissioner Leonard, is appropriate at all at this point. And I think it would be very destructive to the quality of water, to the quality of life in the city of Portland, and I think you should rethink and request that the council reconsider what you have offered. That would be the most dignified thing to do today. I also feel that you haven't investigated properly the fact that New York indicted the very name that we put on as the world model for testing water, Carollo, right near our airport. John Carollo in New York has been indicted by a jury of public people. And we haven't even investigated what their operation is. We walked out there to see what they're doing with the water. We can't find any traces. To get information on projects like this in this Water Bureau is nearly impossible. We can't even get up to, I had to get an international organization to fly us over your headworks to get an idea of what the project looked like. The public does not have the kind of appropriate transparency in this Water Bureau where costs are skyrocketing, where it's proven in New York that Carollo is part of the cartel that sets bidding prices, and you're telling us that we shouldn't have competitive bidding and we should go ahead with this ridiculous proposal. You got to be a little more convincing than that for the public to accept it or to cooperate with you, because you're going to have the future leaders of this council are going to have a heck of a time with the public, with the costs that will be in every aspect of their lives and your lives, and the headaches and the health issues that come along with it. We've turned you back on fluoride. We've turned you back on using water money for inappropriate purposes. Now we want to turn you back on this because the wisdom is in the community. We have wonderful people that have shown magnificent leadership, including our council. And I think that we deserve a better shake. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to testify?
No one else has signed up.
All right. So I have a question for, I guess, David. I know these go on to further consideration that I meant to ask earlier. So as is known by, hopefully, some might remember that I have a key interest in making sure that we are trying to predict into the future not only the water needs of the city, but the context in which we have access to the Bull Run, the success of Bull Run as a rain watershed. And as you know, I've talked and asked about impacts of climate change, and just yesterday the EPA issued a new report on climate change and impacts to drinking water around the United States. Can you remind me, so how many days of secure water we have? So I do not consider open reservoirs to be as secure as contained reservoirs. Well, how many days?
Our goal is to have somewhere between 2 and 3 days, but that's really more to deal with a catastrophic event, not climate change. I mean, 2 or 3 days isn't going to do much in climate change, but it's between 2 and 3 days.
And what do we have right now?
Between 2 and 3 days. I mean, we will end up with, when we're completely done with all of the projects, we will have approximately 50 million gallons less in storage when we are done. And that will suffice for our needs from a day-to-day operation and catastrophic emergency events.
And how is the
stored, secured water stored and secured right now?
Well, most of our water is stored either in an underground tank like Powell Butte or above ground tanks like you see throughout the city and at the four open reservoirs that we currently have in service, reservoir 1, 5, 3, and 4.
So how many of the open reservoir storage will be go from open reservoir to secure
reservoir?
All of it. And how much is that?
It's 50, 25, 75, $90 million gallons.
So $90 million that is currently in an open reservoir will be.
Well, we have more in currently.
So okay. How much of the $90 million would go to secure water storage?
All of our water, when this program is done, will be in secured covered storage.
So the 90 million or whatever the secured amount is, how much is the secured amount? That which is now 90 million will be converted to how much of secured water?
I was answering your question of how much secured storage are we building? It was 90 million.
Okay.
Our current open reservoirs.
I don't add very well in my head anymore.
It's 50 plus 61 plus 34. So
140.
140 some odd.
So 140
like I said, there would
open,
be 50 left when we're
so 140 there. Unsecured open reservoir water will be converted to 90 million gallons of secure water.
Right. We're going from 265 million gallons in our current system to 212 million gallons in our future system, and that will all be covered and secured stored.
Thank you.
David, I have two questions. The two arguments which I've heard the most from the public today had to do with Rochester and had to do with the questions about the land use review
right.
timeline. Let's start with, I think the easier one's the land use review timeline.
Okay.
What has changed in the land use process that you weren't aware of a year ago or 2 years ago in terms of the timeline for consideration?
I think we've just gotten a better sense of what it's going to take, but I'll let Teresa add to that.
So when we put the schedule together in 2009, we were assuming a 12-month land use review process and a Type 3 review. We have since been told it'll be a Type 4 review because of the historic structures and that we should assume an 18 to 24-month review. That's not reflected in that 2009 schedule. In order to meet that, that's why I need to move forward now.
Okay, so that is a change in what you thought were going to be the regulatory hoops
yes,
you had to go through.
So one of the other questions that comes up is this business of expediting. And I'd rather talk about this in a way that backs into why we're doing what we're doing. The actual document that has the first deadline, our first deadline is not about starting anything. The first deadline is to submit plans and specs to Oregon DHS for review and approval, March 30th, 2016. That has not changed.
That's 100% design at that point.
So then you back up 2 years to do the land use review process. That takes you to March of 2014. So in order to engage in the land use process, we've been told we typically land use review to type 1, type 2 land use review, a 60% design is adequate. But this is more complicated land use review, and we think we need a 75 to 90% design, at least of the above ground structures, in order to engage properly in the land use review. So you back that up. That leaves us barely a year to get the above ground structures to that point so that we can engage in the land use review. That's if we start now.
Okay, so to me, I'm sorry, you want to say?
No.
To me, that sounds like a very reasonable explanation for the regulatory piece over the next couple of years. So the second issue that's been presented is, yeah, but why are we even working off 2016? because somehow Rochester is a game changer and would give us a chance to rethink the whole thing. I think in fairness, you should have an opportunity just to respond to that.
Okay. Well, the game changer was New York and getting the city of New York using the offices of Senator Schumer